by a grant from the Crystal Geyser Company. Crystal Geyser, like public broadcasting, is one of America's natural resources.
Above San Francisco Bay. It's another West Coast Weekend Live here on KQBD-FM in San Francisco, featuring today the stellar voices of Chanticleer. Scenes from Vikram Seth's novel brought to us the stage, The Golden Gate, Ancient Future. Writer Michael Mogilevsky about his time alone with killer whales in the Vancouver Island passages. We'll also hear from the West Coast Weekend players, Kathy and Mo from their show. The Urban Geographer makes a return along with Big Bones, Paul Pena, supported by you. And all here live to 1 o'clock today. That's right, we expect 7,000 of you to pledge in the next 2 minutes. Just call right now, saturate those phone calls. Welcome to West Coast Weekend, the show that follows the most popular show on KQED-FM, Car Talk. And I don't know, maybe we should offer West Coast Weekend, I don't know, what could we have? Tofu dice instead of the fuzzy dice. We have a member of the audience here at Life on the Water Theater who has dared to go into the waters and work the KQED digital optical aquaphone. Her name is Cindy, and she's from South Carolina. Welcome.
Thank you.
Are you staying dry enough while operating the device?
It's hard, but I'm managing.
Yeah. It sounds very, very good. Very clear today, doesn't it, Ed? Ed Herman, our engineer, in the booth. Howard Gelman, our engineer, on the stage, making sure that you hear the sound of San Francisco Bay. And, of course, the KQED FM Aquaphone is a membership thank you gift, I understand. Is that true? Yeah, good. Thank you very much. We'll give you a towel, Cindy. Okay. Thank you. By the way, the digital aquaphone is mostly ecologically sound. It is a contained system, and it represents a form of recycling, in a way. It's kind of a closed system. I guess kind of like the Gaia principle, you know, it just sort of recirculates. But the aquaphone, of course, is one of the many thank you gifts that we have. You know, I received my New Yorker magazine this week, and I was sort of assaulted by it when I opened it up with this great rank odor that came out of it. There was, for the first time, the New Yorker has in it one of these perfume inserts. I know, for suppression or repression, one of these perfumes. Very expensive perfumes. Anyway, I left the magazine, sort of, I tore out this perfume insert. 30% of the people in the world are allergic to these scents. And so here they've just sent this magazine. It's like Focus Magazine, I guess, just sending this out to you. And you breathe this stuff in. It's sitting there on the floor of my car, sort of gassing, fuming. And I cannot read anything that's in it. I'm going to have to go find another copy somewhere and write to all the writers and say, I can't read your pieces. I'm sorry. They all stink, and it's not in the sense that we usually mean. But which reminds me of one of the advantages, of course, of radio, is that we cannot stick a perfume insert into the middle of our radio show. All we can do is stick in these pledge breaks. And I don't think it's as high as 30% of people who are allergic to them. But it is important. We have some ambitious plans for this radio show. We'd like to put it up on the big satellite and get it distributed beyond just San Francisco and Philadelphia, all up and down the West Coast, and we need good signs from those of you who are listening that you like the show and want your parents or your friends or your cousins wherever to hear it. And so we encourage you to help out today during West Coast Weekend. It's very important to one and all. We have outstanding performers here on West Coast Weekend today, and I'll tell you about them in a moment. Tomorrow, Father's Day, thinking about my father today, sort of in advance, trying to beat the crowd, I guess. Don't want to think about your father just on Father's Day. I was remembering a trip that I took with him, and it was the first trip that I was able to take alone with my dad. One of my early favorite photographs is of my brother and me standing on a on a high platform at an airport, seeing my father off. He was in his business suit off to somewhere, and we were each in our cute little coats and little caps and waving goodbye. That was about a year or two before I was able to actually join him on a business trip. And I was able to accompany him from Santa Barbara up to San Francisco, where he'd come on business, and we took an airplane ride together. And then he dropped me at his mother's house, my grandmother's. And I was trying to get a little refreshment of memory, what actually went on. Was I here for a weekend, just a day? So I called my parents today and reached my mother, and she said that, you were about 5 or 6 at the time, and your grandmother was asking you about something and found out that there were certain things going on in our house that she didn't like. And so she wrote to us about him. I said, well, what'd she say? What was it about? Was it about, you know, how you were raising me? Or is it, oh, no, I'm not going to tell you. It's a secret. I said, oh, come on, Mom. What difference will that make? No, I'm not going to tell you. It'll be embarrassing. And don't talk about it on the radio, whatever you do. So I said, well, maybe. And I spent the weekend with my grandmother at her apartment on Broadway, and she took me around to the zoo and so forth. I think what it had to do with was inquiring how I was spending my Sunday mornings, and somehow my Sunday mornings weren't quite up to the way that she thought that my parents should be raising me. But one of the great thrills was then taking a train ride with my father back to Santa Barbara. It was on the Owl train. There were two trains, the Lark and the Owl, and this one left Oakland late at night and went all the way down the coast and arrived at Santa Barbara early in the morning. We got out in a gray dawn, and there's just something cozy about traveling with my father and eating with him on the train alone, and it was a very nice private time. Then, of course, my little brother got to go on a trip all alone and with my father later on, and I was very jealous and annoyed, and like, what happened to this special treatment? Well, of course, fathers get to mete out that special treatment to all their kids. So I thought about that today in advance of Father's Day. Beat the crowd. Today, Chanticleer is here. All the members of the group have fathers. We also are hearing actors from The Golden Gate, which is the production based on Vikram Seth's iambic tetrameter depiction of life in the Bay Area in the 1980s. It's droll, and it's kind of epic in scale. I asked the producer if it was kind of like Virgil, and he says, no, it's more like Byron. But it's very humorous, and we'll have a scene from that. Also from their acclaimed show, Kathy and Mo are here, along with Ancient Future, and we'll hear what that means. Is it an oxymoron? Does it somehow mean the present? I don't know. We'll find out. Big Bones and Paul Pena are here, along with the return of the much-vaunted urban geographer, all here on West Coast Weekend. I'd like to welcome, and I hope you join me with welcoming Chanticleer, and we have 8 of them. Eight members of Chanticleer are here dressed sort of Saturday morning casual, which is sort of how they dress for their concerts sometimes. Is that right?
Sometimes, yes.
Could you introduce all the members of the group here today, please?
Sure. That's Chad Runyon, and he sings baritone. And Matthew Thompson is next to him, and he sings tenor. As well as Jonathan Goodman and Mark Daniel. They all sing tenor over there. In the center, there's Foster Summerlad and Philip Wilder, who sing countertenor, and Frank Allbinder, who sings bass baritone.
And you?
And I'm Joe Jennings.
And you sing?
I float.
You float?
Now, what does that mean? I mean, do you float from bass to countertenor?
That's right. Today, I float from bass to countertenor.
That's quite a...
I sink to bass. I float to countertenor and sink to bass now.
That's an extraordinary range.
Yeah.
So do you protect your voice in some way when you go up to a countertenor?
No.
Mm-mm.
No raincoats, no safety nets, nothing.
You just move?
Just wing it.
You just wing it?
Just wing it, yeah.
You're presenting a big show at the Theater Artaud with Japanese dancers.
Actually, it's at George Coates Performance Works that this show is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with some Japanese dancers, Eko and Komo.
And they dance to your singing?
They dance to our singing, we sing to their dancing.
Is there some improvisation that goes on your part?
Yes, since the style of dancing that they're doing is very elongated, I should say. And they're also dancing in water. But we do some improv.
And what do you mean dancing in water? Is that like floating from base to counter?
Well, the piece that they're doing actually takes place, I guess, in about a foot of water or so. A few inches, something like that. I have to ask Bo, because I'm not quite sure. We sing above them. We don't get to see them actually yet dance. We're on levels above them, you know, and they're down in the water, you see.
And they dance, and you sing. So normally you sing from very great precise from the music scores, but you're actually improvising now?
At some points during the show, we do improvise. There are certain dance sections that have to be 9 minutes or 12 minutes, and they like particular music of a certain section, and so we, you know, expand that to their needs. And it gives us an opportunity to be creative on the spot.
Are you going to be creative on the spot right now?
Well, yes, we're going to do a couple of things we're doing actually in that show, and this is some Renaissance music, actually medieval and Renaissance. But first we'll do some Gregorian chant.
Chanticleer.
Ave Maria Stella, Dei Mater Alma, atque semper Virgo, felis Geni porta. Sub mensi luna ve, Gabrielis ore, funda nos in pace, mutans eve nomen. Solve vincareis, profer lumen cecis, mala nostra pelle, bona cunta posce. Monstra te se matrem, sumat per te preces, qui pro nobis natus, tu vites et tu. Virgo singulari, omnes mitis nos culpis solutos mites facet castos vitam presta pura iter para tutum ut videntes Iesum sit laus Deo Patris, sumo Christo Decus, Spiritui Sancto, tribus orolus.
Hey.
Chanticleer will be performing with dancers at the George Coates Performance Works in San Francisco June 19th through the 30th, Wednesday through Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. They'll also be at Stern Grove tomorrow afternoon at 2. And they'll be back here on West Coast Weekend, here at the stage of Life on the Water Theater at Fort Mason in the midst of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, where I just checked out the back door and saw that the crowds are gathering for the commemoration of the statue of Congressman Burton. Up there in the Great Meadow, I understand that Tom Foley will be here. You can go out and lobby him probably after the show, unless they zip in and out. And I think the statue is being commemorated today in the appropriate way. They're bringing in some special pigeons to roost on it to just sort of break it in officially. And of course, good news. Of course, the headlines that we've been waiting for, a drought may end next winter. Of course, the headline that's above it is, Volcano May Bring Rain to California. I'd like to welcome here to West Coast Weekend the actors from The Golden Gate, a dramatization of the novel by Vikram Seth called The Golden Gate. And this is in iambic tetrameter. It was a novel, long novel, 300 pages, came out in the mid-1980s, depicting life in the Bay Area in verse. And I'd like to welcome all of the actors who are here behind me. And Stephen Sachs is right here. If you could come up as the producer and director of the production, who's brought this novel to stage here in San Francisco. How are you? What attracted you to the book as a play?
Well, it was the language, actually. When I first read the book in 1986, it caused a big stir, especially in the Bay Area. It was the number one bestseller in San Francisco. It was a 300-page novel in verse, in tetrameter, sonnet form, about contemporary life in San Francisco. And it was the language, which was so fun and clever, witty, and also very beautiful, that really struck me. And as soon as I read it, I thought to myself that actors needed to say these words.
And what goes on in basically the story of the play?
Well, it's the story of five young people in San Francisco in 1980, and all of them are feeling that their careers are going well, that they're on the move, that life is good, yet something is missing in their life. They're a little lonely, and the story is about how these five people find happiness and friendship and trying to connect in some kind of a personal way.
Now, the 307 pages would come out to, well, like a 42-hour play if you did it all red line. So how did you decide to make the cuts?
Well, I chose this storyline of these five main people first off and just went through the book and began editing it down and giving it a dramatic form, because the form of a play is much different than that of a novel, as you know. And that's how it began. And that was the first half of the process. And then the second half was bringing it to this this cast. And they're all very bright, intelligent people, and they would tell me, this doesn't work, we need to fix this over here, and so forth. And it was really a collaboration for all of us.
Was there any collaboration with Vikram Seth, who I understand now lives in India?
Yeah, he does. He lives in New Delhi. He gave me carte blanche artistically. He trusted me completely and was there opening night in Los Angeles for the world premiere and loved it. We were all very nervous about him coming to see the show, but he sat in the third row and I was up in the light booth, not watching the play, but watching him up front. And for the first few minutes, he was a little nervous, wondering how could this possibly be done on stage. But after the first few minutes, he was so taken by the humor and the beauty of the piece that I think he forgot that he wrote all this language and was just swept up by the story.
Is there a favorite line that you had to take out that you would have liked to still have in the play?
No, I think all of my little favorite beauties are in the play. It's quite wonderful.
All right, and the scene we're going to hear features which actors?
It features Larry Poindexter and Emily Kuroda, Larry playing John and Emily playing Janet. And this scene takes place in a Chinese restaurant. They're old friends and former lovers, and John is feeling that somehow his life has run to seed a little bit, and his friend Janet is there to give advice.
So how are the cats?
It's fine.
And you?
Great.
Your sculpture?
Let me ask that too.
Your singing group.
But I came here to hear your song. Now sing.
Jan, I don't know what's wrong. I'm young, employed, healthy, ambitious, sound, solvent, self-made, self-possessed. But all my symptoms are pernicious. The Dow Jones of my heart's depressed. The sunflower of my youth is wilting. The tower of my dreams is tilting. The zoom lens of my zest is blurred. The drama of my life's absurd. What is the root of my neuroses? I jog. I eat brewer's yeast each day. Yet I feel life slip away. I wait your sapient diagnoses. I die, I fail, I faint, I sink.
You need a lover, John, I think. Someone, I'd say, who's fun to be with.
And plenty of vitamin C to eat.
And choose a richer lens to see with. Reach for a vision more complete. Trade in that zoom for a wide angle. Don't let your drooping sunflower dangle. Think of yourself a few years later, possessing as the years go, less pre-possessing vital data. Love handles.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Receding, don't be getting nervous.
More rice, I wonder when they'll serve us.
Hairline. Lonely and lost sans love sans lover. Nursing the dregs of your hangover, blubbering into your raisin bran. Why not do something while you can?
Okay. You've got a point. Enough BSing. Suppose you're right. So how do I hook chicks?
You'll blow up badly till you clean up your pig's beak act.
Oh, come on, Janet. Don't overreact. You know I didn't mean it.
Oh, nor, I suppose, did the crude, crass hall manager who pinched my ass last night. Cute chick. You should have seen it. I punched his snout. To hook a chick? Such porcine lingo makes me sick.
A venial linguistic tumor.
It's not benign. Enough said, John. You've got my drift. I won't go on.
Friends?
Friends, of course, you fool. Your office, John. Any nice women?
None too hot.
Any nice guys?
Oh, come on, Jenny. You know I don't go for that, so can it?
Well, don't knock what you haven't tried.
Just stir your overstirred stir-fried.
A museum.
With base volition, I've gaped at Goya, ogled Titian, loitered by Rubens with intent. But have to date not made a dent in the cool academic armor the women wandering through those halls assume. And we stare at painted walls, but not a word's exchanged. Well, I gave it up eventually. My weekends mean too much to me.
Your weekends. Well, how do you spend them?
Where do my weekends go? Well, things go wrong. I have to mend them. A plug, the plumbing, the Peugeot. A stone stuck in the electric mower. And I'm a regular moviegoer. Whenever there's a decent show, I try and find the time to go. Well, last week, I saw Buster Keaton. I really like him. He never smiles. And then home to catch up on my files.
can of chili when I've eaten.
We've got to put an end to this. There has to be a swift solution to this impasse.
Electrocution? I could jump off the Golden Gate, read in the Bay Guardian.
Wait! I got it, John, the perfect answer. I should have thought of it. My friend, your sufferings are at an end.
That sounds as terminal as cancer. Let's hear it.
Advertise.
What? Me? Advertise? You must be joking.
I'm serious.
No, Jan, you're nuts.
I'm not.
No, Jan, you've had such a soaking in Sing Tao, you don't know what's what, me advertise. You must be kidding.
Kiddo, I'm not. Just do my bidding. Take out an ad right now, today. Young, handsome, yuppie, seeks...
No way! No, I've always thought your schemes, though wacky, conceived in midair, born in haste, remained within the bounds of taste. But as for this one, talk of tacky, let's talk of something else instead. Young yuppie. Better dead than red.
Divorced, white, Jewish, single, 50. Solvent, sexy, thrilling, thrifty. Seeks a bosomy brunette who likes to play the flageolet. Let me make music with you, baby, box 69. I will not share a column with such types out there. How could you think I'd do it?
Emily Kuroda and Larry Poindexter from The Golden Gate, two of the actors. Memorizing this at all tricky, keeping the rhythm going for you, Emily?
No, it wasn't.
Do you find the rhythm of the speech makes it actually easier to learn the words and remember the...
Yeah, it's easier, you know, because if you get stuck on a line, you know you just have to rhyme it later. which has happened a couple of times on stage where you're completely lost and you go, I feel that I have to think, maybe I need a drink. Would you get me to the kitchen sink? You know, I mean, just try and find something that rhymes.
And you keep it in that iambic tetrameter, too. Oh,
yeah. Well, it breaks out. I mean, it does break out. It's very accessible. It's not like doing Molière or Shakespeare or something like that where you have an archaic form. You're using contemporary language. And everything's very, you know, boom, boom, boom. You understand it, and it's not a difficult...
Do you ever think of how these characters would have evolved into the 1990s with job layoffs, recessions, bargaining for lower prices... stopping drinking, safe sex?
No.
All right. Oh, there are two other of the actors here I want to quickly ask. Jacqueline Schultz and Peter Sprigg. And if you could just sort of quickly describe your characters.
I play Elizabeth Dorati. And Peter plays my brother, Ed Dorati. I play an attorney who, at the very beginning of the play, is very lonely, and she answers an ad that Janet puts in the Bay Guardian for John. And I answer that ad, and he answers back, and we get together, and that's how the play evolves.
And Peter?
Well, I would never stoop to putting an ad in the Bay Guardian, but I play a young man who's very confused about his sexuality and his Christianity and is trying to come to terms with reconciling those two.
So you're sort of the spiritual element of the show?
Very much so, yeah.
Somebody else is the Peugeot element. And your character?
I confuse Peter's character.
Nice.
That was the voice of Dan Sturtevant, and they're all in the production, The Golden Gate, at the Zephyr Theater in San Francisco through July...
Whenever.
Oh, you may extend.
Depending on the audience. If all these people in the audience came...
If all they... Yeah,
that would extend the show indefinitely.
For more information about the run of the Golden Gate Theater, 861-6895, adapted by Stephen Sachs from Vikram Seth's novel.